This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C. It's just gone past 6 in the morning. It's Tuesday, the 25th of May, and it's the first day of the stricter MCO 3.0, isn't it?
Yes, but what's the difference?
Well, the difference is the shops shut at, they open at 8 and they shut at 8 p.m. unless you're a pharmacy. I think that's the first thing that I can remember. You're only limited to 2 hours in the mall.
Yes.
Please check your My Sejahtera. Don't go over that time. There might be spot checks on you, but actually it's down to you maintaining that self-discipline.
So I guess if you order food and delivery, you have to order by 7.
Yeah.
Because the kitchens were all closed.
Yeah, and the drivers also have to stop working.
The drivers also have to stop. So all food has to be delivered. So recalibrate your diets, gentlemen and ladies.
Start either eat earlier or order earlier and eat later at your leisure at home.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or cook at home.
Yeah, but I do wonder for some people whether that is really truly a challenge, especially if you are shift work and you do finish at 8 p.m. But I think it boils down to actually having to plan. Unfortunately, it is what it is, right?
You know what I'm planning for? My holiday tomorrow.
Yes. By the way, listeners, although we are kind of in this back into this work from home mode for a lot of us, except for people like us in the studio, tomorrow is Vesak Day.
Yes. Happy birthday, Buddha.
Yeah.
In advance.
In advance. So it's another public holiday and we get to celebrate it at home.
Yeah. What are you planning to do tomorrow? Are you going to bake lots of delicious cakes?
Probably.
And bring it over to the studio on Thursday for us to devour?
Yes, very likely. But I will also try and sneak in a little run as usual.
Ah, good.
That's my thing I do on my day off.
I'll be lying in my duvet.
But you know the one thing great, if there's anything positive from the result of COVID-19, and this is a slight positive, is I do see more people exercising outdoors. A lot more.
Yes.
And you know, I wouldn't say it's crowded because I typically run the same time every morning, which is about 6:30. And in the past, you know, you might just see one or two people. But now you see far more people taking walks, which is great.
That's true. I'm a bit of a freak because on the weeks I'm not on air, I actually go for my early jog or morning at 5 in the morning.
Okay, that's like super duper early.
Correct. And about 2 months ago, no one was around. But now I actually meet people who are actually also jogging at 5 in the morning.
Well, guess what? You're not alone in the freaky world, Philip. Okay, what else do we have this morning? What's up next?
Well, freakishness element, which is the emotion recognition business. I think that's really big business.
How do they do this? That. How do they recognize your emotions?
Is
it facial?
It's totally facial.
Ah, scary. So the computers are reading your mind, reading you in a way.
Yes, and it's trying to gauge your interest level. And it's got huge political, economic implications.
This is the world of AI, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, and then when we come back, we'll be talking about what's really important in terms of economic growth. What comes first?
Yep.
So as usual, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes, but first here's The Steps by Haim. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was The Steps by Haim. You're listening to The Morning Run. It has just gone past 6:07. It's a Tuesday, the 25th of May. And we've got this rather interesting article, and I think it's very timely. It's from CNBC, chosen by the one and only Philip C, obviously.
Hello.
Hello. And the title is A Guide to Degrowth, the movement prioritizing well-being in a bid to avoid climate. What's this word?
I can never cataclysm.
Okay, big word. Obviously chosen by you, that's why. So the question is, you know, as we are moving into this economic rebound, recovery stage, what's important? Is it really chasing GDP? You know, is that the thing that we should, the gold standard, or should we be looking at other standards?
You know, this is always the question, whether GDP is a measure of our productivity, our progress. Always, you know, and I remember like 10 years ago, we always talk about GDP numbers being the central guide to whether we are moving forward as a nation. Of course, in Asia, Bhutan is a classic example where it's not GDP, but GNH, gross national happiness. But recently, other countries like New Zealand, Scotland's not a country, but part
they
of
want to be. Want some to people, be. Some people want to be. Yeah. Some people in Scotland.
That's right. Iceland. They have been thinking that actually, no, let's not think about the GDP number, but let's just think about other measures of measuring progress as a country.
Okay, You know, I'm a bit of a markets kind of lady, right?
Yep.
And I like economics.
Financial markets.
Finance. I like money, lah.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay, I'll just say it out. And I think GDP is not necessarily a bad measurement because I'm also a believer in tests. Haha, I'm old school. Money and tests. But the thing is, when you have a measurement that is equal or the same, yeah. That everybody uses. Well, to be fair, there's a lot of debate what people put in GDP. Some countries, some economists say you should use this measurement and all that. Okay, let's not go into the weeds of it. But the point is, when there's a standard measurement, it's not necessarily a bad thing because then you have a gauge of how well you're doing against yourself because you have historical GDP. Mm. You can also use it as a target for what you intend to achieve. But it's also really good as a measurement against how you're doing against other countries sometimes.
Yes.
So I would say it has its role, but you're right. Is it, should it be the only measurement? That's the question mark,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, I agree with you. It should be still a relevant measure. It's whether or not it should just dominate our thinking in terms of economic development and drive. I think that's the key question. I think the challenge we have now is that you see this whole decoupling between economic growth and perhaps income, even, right? And even income as a point is sometimes contentious because the distribution of the income is a problem.
Yeah.
And that's why discussions of inequality are being raised. So that's, I think, the challenge of how you unpack GDP and say, look, it's very important, but it's not the end all and the only thing to measure.
I mean, clearly, you know, we've got some new terms coming out of this COVID-19 crisis, one of which is, of course, the K economy, right? So yes, your GDP, you know, the huge rebound from the low base effect. But the reality is that, is everybody feeling that same growth? Is everybody enjoying the fruits of this rebound? And clearly not, right? Because unemployment, let's say even Malaysia, stubbornly high, 4.8%, as we move into MCO 3.0, the stricter version. For sure, some people will be affected more than others, especially if you're a day wage worker, perhaps you were in retail, you were in hospitality, even your Grab driver, because now your hours are shorter. It's 8 to 8. Previously, it was 8 to 10. At one time, it wasn't even restricted, right? So your ability to earn that extra income is definitely curtailed. And like us, if we are not going out, we're not spending the money, the economy is not moving. So, yeah, you're right. You know, you can have a nice number, but does it reflect on how people feel? What's in their pockets? Is there improvement in the quality of the in their lives? Now, the CNBC also highlights this from an environmental point of view, right?
That's right.
This GDP comes at what cost? Does it come at the cost of our climate?
Yeah, so actually degrowth as a concept is not an new concept. It was raised in the 1950s, and the Council of Rome actually had a huge discussion about this, but it was kind of pulled aside. It's basically come back up again as a result of environment, because they're now saying that, is this growth at the expense of our climate? Is this growth at the expense of our environment?
Mm.
And so the conversation is shifting a bit now from this whole question about inequality to, should we do something to basically ensure that we are able to protect our climate? And so the proponents for degrowth say, this is very different from a recession, because we always classify a reduction in GDP with recession. But they say a recession is unplanned, whereas degrowth is a conscious effort to plan a reduction in economic activity.
Yeah, I think the CNBC article also highlights something very interesting, and that is to dive a little bit deeper when you look at growth and to see growth from a sectoral point of view rather than just a headline number.
Yep.
So are you actually growing in things that do matter? For example, they highlight public transport, renewable energy. What sectors perhaps are too big and should be scaled down, which have an environmental damage?
Mm.
So maybe like oil and gas, you know, that's an obvious one. Are we manufacturing too much plastics that is not recyclable, for example?
So this is the challenge, because if you're targeted and say, look, I want green growth, growth in the areas that are sustainable and all that, it comes at a premium. So you will essentially compromise a bit of the GDP as a result of this overinvestment in these sectors. They may not naturally deliver the returns you want immediately, but of course, it's long-term returns that you could accrue. So the challenge you have is this GDP number. And when someone looks at it, maybe it's okay number, but maybe it's framing it from a time zone perspective. Is it for the next 1 year, 3 years, or are we going to take a bit of a longer view, 30 years, 50 years? You know, that's really the challenge. So a very good example I've always had with environment is this whole debate. Do we focus on option A, reducing carbon emissions emissions by a certain percentage by 2030 or net zero by 2050.
Mm.
Now, you say they are the same, but they're actually not the same.
No,
because
they're not.
If I say I reduce by half in 2030, I would say, let's go to gas.
Yeah.
But gas will not get you to zero by 2050. So that's a really difficult conundrum we have. How do you put the balance between the short and long term? It's really, for me, a big question mark.
I think CNBC also highlighted the critics of this degrowth concept from an individual perspective. Whether we as individuals are now going to be asked, okay, you're not going to enjoy maybe the same lifestyle or the same level of wealth as your parents. Is this something you're perhaps ready to accept as if you are trying to achieve a more balanced society, a more equitable society?
True. And in Japan, there is this whole powering down and going back to basics. You know, I find that actually the next generation is quite interested in the concept that less is more.
Mm.
Whereas I think older generations are like about accumulative and like acquiring trinkets and all that in the house. So,
but maybe also the sense of insecurity. You know, there's so many issues, right? We are a combination of a myriad of our experiences, our upbringing. But as always, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or of course, you can Twitter in at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. We'll come back very shortly. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was The Air That I Breathe by The Hollies, which to me had a bit of a ABBA vibe to it. I don't know whether you agree.
I just don't want if the air is COVID. I just don't want to breathe in air that has COVID in it. That's for me the most important thing now.
How true. Okay, maybe this shouldn't be the anthem for BFM for the moment.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Anyway, it's 6:21 in the morning. It's Tuesday, the 25th of May. And up next is not an article. Haha. It's something different.
Tricked you.
It's a video, right? It's
yes.
A short video. It's from the Financial Times, and it's called the Emotion Recognition Business. So I managed to watch like maybe three quarters. I confess I didn't watch the whole thing, but I got the gist of it. Basically, computers are watching you.
Absolutely. And you're watching your facial expressions. You have 7 facial expressions which they can assess you with. Happy, surprised, neutral, sad, fearful, disgusted, and angry. And it really works.
I'm trying to think which one's missing from the...
Think it through, right?
Yeah.
There are these 7. And it's so powerful. And corporates have been using it. For example, Disney, when evaluating Zootopia, they were doing emotional recognition.
Zootopia, for those who don't know, is a movie, right?
Yes,
it's a movie about animals. Obviously.
Yes, it's an amazing movie. I love the movie. Okay. So a lot of my facial recognition was happy, but I'm not
Who
sure.
Who watches a Disney show and isn't happy? I mean, it's the La La Land of the happiest place on earth, right?
That's true. I guess some people could have been angry
irritated. Might have been me.
Like, and Ariel was like doing weird stuff. But in any case, it's such a powerful tool in terms of being able to gauge people's reactions because sometimes our words don't reflect what we actually think.
But you know what, Philip? This disturbs me on a different level because we are now letting computers capture our inner thoughts and emotions in a way, right? Okay, in the past, the computer was just a tool in which, for a lot of us, we used to work, okay? We made life much simpler by using the computer. But now, it's not a one-way interaction. In the past, it was like, I input stuff into the computer, the computer does something for me, and helps me like maintain spreadsheets. I use it to surf the web. I used to get it information. But now it's like a two-way thing because they are watching me and they, I refer to the world, you know, companies, basically the World Wide Web.
Companies.
Because there are cameras in almost every single gadget we own.
Look, it's not any companies, it's governments as well. And usually the guise is security. So you go to airports, you're going to see facial recognition scanners. You're going to see high surveillance locations. Facial recognition is core. So for them, it's a core get into the pace. And then later, there's so many ways to monetize it. But there are also some benefits.
I like that word. You're being honest, Philip, because the reason why everybody doing
it's to monetize it
is to make money from it, right?
Although there are some benefits like cars.
Mm.
You know, having the facial will gauge whether you're tired or not.
Okay. Oh, yes.
So if you're drooping, your eyes are dropping, they will be able to alert and say, hey, actually, it's time for you to wake up and perk up.
So it's not like 100% negative.
Not all.
So there are some positives. I think to be fair, the one that was really, you know, far ahead of everyone when it comes to facial recognition, of course, is China.
Yes.
I think if you look at Beijing Airport, you know, I think this is in 2008, 2009, in the early days, they were already using that level of technology. But of course, there are other reasons why they do that. But it actually helped them during the COVID-19, in the early days of the crisis, to actually track who they thought might be potential COVID-19 patients. And it was a way of keeping track of their huge population, 1.3 billion people. But I wonder whether privacy then becomes a big question. For some people, they don't realize that their movements, their facial expressions are all being captured. It's translated into big data, which is then used in some way to market products to them. And then, do I really want everyone to know how I look, what I'm thinking?
It's important to gauge sentiment. Can you imagine governments just doing a snapshot to see how our rakyat feel?
Yeah, it's especially, let's say,
on KLCC?
Or maybe let's say you're watching a certain press conference or press briefing, and then you capture what is the mood of the nation, literally.
US political debates, they will be able to gauge your interest. Even when you go for job interviews, your facial recognition will give you a sense of your personality as well.
Yeah, I find it a bit scary.
Dystopian.
It is. George Orwell, I'm sorry, but you really wrote the future.
Mine.
But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us in 018-789-8899, or you can let us know at BFM Radio on Twitter. Up next will be the news bulletin, and to take us there is Pop Life by Prince. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, it is 6:40 in the morning, and that was Someday by Sugar Ray. Someday
we will be prancing around in the shopping malls.
For more than 2 hours.
For more than 2 hours with kids going around and...
Back in school, hopefully.
Back in school.
Kids back in school. One day we might actually be getting on the plane, flying here and there. Someday
going
we
to
might
Turkey.
Be able to eat in a restaurant. I hope that someday eating in the restaurant is sooner than flying in the plane.
Yeah, hopefully.
There's a lot of some days, but I think the point is, if we do our part, get vaccinated, get that herd immunity up,
that's
that someday
right.
might be soon.
I think US, the UK are leading the way in this sense. They're showing us that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. If we get our act together, we bring down the cases, we get vaccinated, we can see that actually cases are going to drop, and there is a sign that people are actually going around and life is slowly coming back to normal there.
Yeah, over the weekend, actually, UK residents, some of them, they flew to Iceland. I saw some pictures.
Yeah.
Some flew to Portugal. But it's not an easy process, by the way. It requires some form of paperwork, test before you go. We might have to get used to that. That will probably be the new normal, even if we are allowed to travel. And talking about travel and getting on the plane, there was this news yesterday over a flight, because the European Union now has moved a step closer towards adding more sanctions against Belarus and imposed an effective flight blockade on the country after Belarus conducted a forced landing of a Ryanair Holdings jet and arrested a dissident journalist. This sounds like, honestly, an episode out of a James Bond movie or thriller.
It is, because apparently the plane, on the way from Athens, as it was heading to land into, I think, Lithuania, it just got diverted and had to land at Minsk to basically exit out this journalist, the 26-year-old Roman Protasevich. Now, Belarus, of course, has had a lot of controversy in the past 1-2 years. There was this really fraught election where I think the current incumbent basically rammed through democracy, and there was a huge unrest there, or political demonstrations that took place. So I think the EU has really not taken this very lightly, and they're planning to impose more sanctions and restrictions on Belarus.
Yeah, because they basically made up a story that the plane wasn't safe, right?
That's right. They said there was a bomb on board.
Okay, so the pilots, of course, had to land the plane. Safety of the passengers is a priority. And then it turned out to be, hey, there's no evidence of this at all, right?
Yeah.
So clearly, I guess if you are EU, you wouldn't be happy about this. What does this mean about democracy, though? I mean, and it just makes it almost a mockery.
Yeah, and this is the problem about not nipping it in the bud, because I think a year ago with Belarus, there was a lot of uprising and domestic unhappiness over the current president.
Mm.
And I think the EU was not firm enough. They didn't really push hard to exit the current incumbent. And as a result, I think you're paying the price for all this lack of inaction.
wonder what Russia is thinking about all this, because clearly they're in Belarus and Russia are quite close.
That's right. So this is a challenge where the EU has to tread lightly across this, what we call the former Iron Curtain.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Where there are all these initially very pro-EU, pro-Western democracy, but you're seeing many of these democracies slowly having a bit more totalitarian view of the world and realigning a bit back to their old former Soviet partner.
Well, this is going to be an interesting conversation and something that actually we'll be exploring later on at 8 a.m. because we're having a breakfast grill with the ambassador of Georgia, who also have their respective issues with Russia. And I guess whether this is part of the Balkans, right? I mean, this is a very complicated region with its own historical past. So something, you know, might be almost a boiling pot of geopolitical tensions.
Neighbours are always difficult to have really great relationships.
But we get along with Singapore and Thailand.
Really?
And Indonesia? We do. We do. In the scheme of things, actually, I mean, we don't have any, you know,
diplomatically,
skirmishes.
Yes. But you see, like Myanmar is a classic example where they are considered neighbour. Of course, as neighbours, we want them to uphold certain values because of our proximity. But that tension, whether we do that or not, it still comes to boil still.
Of course. And talking about neighbours, Thailand will extend a nationwide state of emergency for another 2 months after it was initially put in place in March last year, as the deadliest wave yet of the COVID-19 outbreak so far shows no sign of easing. And just like us, they're in their third wave that saw a quadrupling of the nation's case count in just 7 weeks, with deaths jumping sevenfold.
Yeah, I got to say, looking at just Thailand's data in terms of vaccinations, they're actually behind us. They're not as good as even our vaccination program, which is now past the 5% mark for the first. I think this is a challenge where the infection started in Bangkok's night entertainment venues in early April, which is quite similar to what you saw in Korea and in Taiwan. And it really gets me thinking about, you know, where all these infections are taking place. They are in kind of these places, massage parlors and all that, where people, I feel, don't want to disclose and share.
Same as in Taiwan, right? Over those, what they call tea houses.
Tea houses. And even earlier at Korea, at the clubs. So I think there's this whole stigma about being transparent when you enter into these locations. And I think that's where it's ruling to roost now.
Yeah, as a result, Thailand is slashing its growth outlook for the year. Now, they're citing the delay in the reopening of borders to foreign tourists and the slow pace of vaccination. So GDP may only expand between 1.5% to 2.5% this year, less than the 2.5-3.5 forecast in February. And we did have a conversation with Chanon Bunut Church, Southeast Asia economist at Nomura, giving us his outlook in terms of the Thai economy. But just to give you some colour, Thailand has apparently total confirmed cases of 126,000. Currently, last Sunday, they had a count of 3,052. And just like them, they initially seem to have a grip on COVID-19.
You know, we had this discussion privately yesterday about the challenge about when you had the first wave and you managed to contain it. I wonder if complacency has set in across a lot of these Asian countries.
I think complacency, unfortunately, sets in across the board.
That's right.
Yeah. As always, give us your thoughts. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll be taking a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that song was The House is Rocking by Stevie Ray Vaughan. It is 6:51. It's Tuesday, the 25th of May. And at this hour, we're looking at the newspapers.
That's
Philip, what
right.
do you have in front of you?
I think this is a very important news for all you parents who are going to send your children abroad. So a new travel pass needs to be applied via the department's My Travel Pass system if your kid wants to travel overseas for studies.
Oh, okay. Is it going to be more cumbersome or is it going to be easier?
Well, it doesn't say the specific details, but it's another layer of approval you need to secure. So you have to go through the My Travel Pass system, which is at the Immigration Department.
Okay. I think today also the top news, of course, is the coalition the accident, unfortunate accident, that happened on the Kelana Jaya light rail transit train. Passengers had a harrowing moment, and this is according to the Malay Mail Online. So it was apparently suddenly stopped, and then they were flung by the impact of its collision with another train. And this accident happened in the tunnel near KLCC. And I gather there are, you know, more than 40 people who are currently critically injured. So it seems like it must have been, the impact must have been quite severe.
A severe impact. And I think the Minister of Transport, Dato' Wee Kiasiong, was rushed to the scene. Interestingly, these trains, you know, we used to take these trains and commute when we go to work. They were actually driverless trains.
Oh, okay.
So most of the time. So really keen to see what happened. But as you said, they're going to do a 2-week investigation with the results hopefully telling us what was the root cause behind the collision and crash.
Yeah, and it is the first black mark, and this is the Malay Mail also, in the 23 years of operation of the LRT Kelana Jaya line. So in the mean, and it's serious. And so, like you say, the Transport Ministry is looking into this. The investigation panel is supposed to start. And even then, there will be a preliminary report sent to the minister tomorrow. So we might get some colour in terms of how this happened. In the meantime, passengers will have to take shuttle buses to ferry passengers between KLCC and Kampong Bahru LRT station if the train services could not resume in the morning.
Yeah, this is pretty big news because we've never seen a collision of this magnitude before. We've always seen trains kind of get suspended or not move and people have to walk through the tracks. But this collision is, I think, first of its kind, actually.
Yeah, so it happened between an empty carriage that was on a test run and one laden with passengers. So one carriage apparently was travelling at 20 kilometres per hour and another at 40 kilometres per hour when the collision happened, and this caused a significant jolt. My question mark, of course, and I'm sure the investigation will reveal, just curious because it's 23 years old, right? What kind of maintenance had been happening? Was it due for an overhaul? Are these trains 23 years old or are they newer trains? Were the tracks maintained? Was there enough supervision? Because actually, driverless trains are actually quite common.
Yes, it's common. And, you know, 23-year-old trains, perhaps nothing of an anomaly. I think you asked a good question about whether there's a maintenance regime, how it was maintained. I hope the investigation provides clarity, not only to what actually happened, but perhaps give some clues with respect to the root cause behind the collision as well.
Yeah. And then looking at the Edge CEO morning brief, what's interesting is this, you know, on page 5, with regards to MCO 3.0, because the article says whether the lack of clarity on it raises growth concerns. And I think this was a call we had with Kelvin Cheng from ISIS yesterday. What kind of impact will it have on GDP? But he also went one step further in terms of suggesting what needed to be done for the most economically vulnerable.
I wonder if anyone can dissect the distinction between the lack of clarity and the actual impact of MCO.
Oh, it's going to be
It's going to be a hard one.
Yeah,
but that's, I think, what the article is alluding to, whether you can isolate the flip-flopping, the dynamism, the changing SOPs, how that actually has a direct impact to the economy.
Yeah, I think there will probably be a lot of post-mortem after COVID-19. Yeah. You know, hopefully this someday it will be put behind us. And then I think it'll be interesting to know with each MCO, what was the impact? What hits the economy the hardest?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe solutions, because I think we're going to have to live with pandemic. It's possible that there will be other lockdowns in the future. So tweaking that balance. The other question I want to know, is it more painful to the economy every time you stop and restart and then stop and restart?
That's true. Because especially for factories and manufacturing, to set up and to basically ramp up or ramp down takes time.
Yeah.
And there's that disruption period in between. And that can be quite lengthy if you are operating in complex manufacturing systems.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if I'm looking at the Malaysia Kini, apparently 12 private hospitals are going to join the national vaccination campaign starting today.
Good, good. I saw that. It's across all of locations. Selangor, Negeri Sembilan, Melaka are all the hospitals that were covered as well.
Yeah. So they're going to offer a combined capacity of 2,250 doses per day. Now, I think I want to stress that this still comes under the Ministry of Health. So if I'm not wrong, you can't roll up to a private hospital and say, inject me now, give me the vaccination. You still need to be informed by your My Sejahtera app, or whether it's through an SMS or through a phone call, the MOH will inform you, this is your allocated time, this is your appointment, please go to this hospital and get the jab.
True. This is a very interesting point, because we always talked about when you manage COVID cases, how it's important to localize. But with respect to vaccination, maybe it's the reverse. You do need to centralize it a bit more.
Yeah. Well, this is part of the government's plans to ramp up vaccination rate to 150,000 injections a day within the next 2 months, as more vaccine deliveries are expected to reach the country in June and July. And we wish MOH the best, and you know, hopefully everybody gets their vaccinations as soon as possible. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we speak to Joe Quinlan, chief market strategist from the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. But first, to take us to the news, is Soul Clapping by Sly and the Family Stone. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.